This is an iHeart podcast.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The DNC freak show, crazy liberal white women. What's happening in the UK? Jim Jordan joins us to talk about this Joe Biden scandal. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, the DNC freak show is in full effect. And as these nutballs get up and give speeches and tear down fences and commit acts of vandalism and violence, we will be here laughing and mocking them every single step of the way this week. Rest assured on that. Of course, there's big speeches tonight. Barack and Michelle Obama speak. Walls and Harris will come later on this week. You know how all this goes. But I want to lead off with a clip maybe you haven't even seen yet. But I'm going to pause on that for a moment. You know about the Japanese in World War II, how brutal they were. And when they would conquer a place, occupy a place, they were just terrible, terrible to the people. There was a real racial superiority thing. They thought they were above all of them. But part of the reason there was such intense hatred for the Japanese was their culture was in so many ways so much different than other people's culture. I'm going somewhere with this, stay with me. So for instance, in the Philippines, when the Japanese took over the Philippines, there ended up being a vicious, wonderful Philippine resistance movement. Spies, saboteurs, blowing up Japanese stuff, assassinating Japanese people. It's this huge, it's a wonderful story a lot of people don't know about. Why was there such a robust movement in the Philippines? Well, one of the many reasons was this. In Japanese culture at the time, physically slapping somebody, especially other men, was very common. In the military especially, it was just how things were done. You just wrap somebody right across the face. It's how things were done. And when they were in charge of others or wanted people to do things, they would do that, slap people a lot. In Filipino culture, there's a whole Latino base there, a variety of reasons, but a slap was considered almost the ultimate affront. If you were to slap a man in Filipino culture, he would hate you for the rest of his life. So you have essentially two completely different cultures, two completely different languages. And to a Japanese person at the time, they wouldn't even understand, why is this guy hanging on to this whole thing? He wants me and my whole family dead because I slapped him. I don't get it. And to the Filipino guy, he's looking at the Japanese guy saying, how could you insult me in such a way? I'll murder you for that. Let's go to American politics. I've warned you about this before. I'm going to warn you again. When Democrats speak, they're not speaking to you. You, me, we want everyone to speak to us. Try to appeal to me. Earn my vote. Sound like a normal person. But Democrats are communists. Communists believe in rewarding their friends and punishing their enemies. That's how they think about life. And for the communist, he simply looks at demographics as to figure out who his best friends are and who he needs to appeal to. So if you're an American Democrat at any level, Senate, president, down to city council, here's what you know for a fact. You know this for a fact. Married men vote Republican, percentage-wise. Married women vote Republican. Single men vote Republican. But then there's single women. 68% of single women vote Democrat. It's overwhelming. And they vote Democrat almost every time. 58% of those, I should point out, have already been diagnosed with mental illness. Those are the ones who've been diagnosed. The beating heart of American communism is single liberal women on anti-anxiety medication. That's not just something I say for laughs or something. That's the truth. And Democrats understand this. Let me ask you something. Do you know any women like this? You ever met a woman like that? Of course you have, because they're everywhere. They're absolutely everywhere. You can't get away from them. The one who walks in the party, her eyes are bugged out, and you guys are just sitting there discussing the kids. I can't believe my kid made varsity, and she comes over and says, I just had an abortion. I hate Trump. You know exactly who these people are. She's the one on Facebook 24 hours a day. My anxiety is spiking. I wish you'd keep the noise down. You know these people, right? So picture that insane, single, liberal, nut job woman in your life. Now, when I play this next clip for you, this is Minnesota Lieutenant Governor. Her name's Peggy. I swear on my life I didn't make that up. I always joke about liberal Aunt Peggy. This woman's name is actually Peggy. And when you listen to this woman in this little clip speak, you're going to roll your eyes, throw up in the trash can, maybe chuck your phone across the room that these people hold power. And I understand all of those things. But you need to understand, and I need to always remember, they're not trying to speak to me. That liberal Aunt Peggy in your life, as you're rolling your eyes here, she loves it.
My name in the Ojibwe language is Gigi Wewedam Ukwe, or in English, speaks with a clear and loud voice, woman. I'm a member of the White Earth Nation, and my family is the Wolf Clan. And the role of our clan is to ensure that we never leave anyone behind. That's why I am supporting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to be the next president and vice president of the United States.
Sorry. I know they're nuts. That woman's insane. And what kind of person would want to hear something like that? Who in the crowd is cheering something like that? Mentally ill women. That's who. That's who they speak to. Look, when communist John Denver, she's known as Randy Weingarten, when she's doing her, when she's doing her speechifying, and you're sitting there and you're plugging your ears, just saying, oh my gosh, make it stop. Crazy liberal white woman loves it.
Anything is important, whether it's wages or a dignified retirement or education opportunity or college without crushing debt or family leave or health care or housing. Any of the things that are important, every single day we need to fight to get Kamala Harris and Tim Walz elected.
Oh, it's hard to listen to. For me, for you. Liberal women on anti-anxiety meds, I love it. That same liberal woman who walks into a Mexican restaurant on a Friday and hits the waiter with a gracias and feels a little bit ethnic when she does it, she heard AOC speak and she loved this.
And I, for one, am tired of hearing about how a two-bit union buster thinks of himself as more of a patriot than the woman who fights every single day to lift working people out from under the boots of greed, trampling on our way of life.
What do you want me to tell you? They're crazy. And finally, to wrap this up, when Joe Biden sells easily verifiable lies like the Charlottesville lie, you roll your eyes, you scream at the television, you say that's been already debunked, it's on camera, none of this is true. But your liberal Aunt Peggy doesn't know that because she's insane and lives in a world of make-believe. So when Joe Biden says this, she believes it.
When the president was asked what he thought had happened, Donald Trump said, and I quote, "There are very fine people on both sides. My God." That's what he said. That is what he said and what he meant. He called them suckers and losers. Who in the hell does he think he is? Who does he think he is? In the pandemic, Kamala and I helped states and cities get back their schools back open. In the pandemic.
Yeah. A world of make-believe. Just remember, they're not even trying to speak to you. They're speaking to the insane people who vote Democrat in the country. All that may have made you uncomfortable, But I am right. We have a huge show for you. Congressman Jim Jordan joins us next. Before he does that, you know what else is insane? Funding these people. Funding them with your purchases, the goods and services you purchase. Now that corporate America has chosen to get knee-deep involved in politics, almost always against us, we have to be political when we buy things. I know that may not be the world you want to live in or the world I want to live in, but that's the world we've been given. Your cell phone, who do you have? Do you have AT&T for your cell phone? Do you have T-Mobile or Verizon? These are despicable companies. Go look up the name of your cell phone company and DEI. You're funding that. Or you could switch to Pure Talk. Their CEO fought for this country. They're so passionate about America and Americans, they hire U.S.-based customer service American citizens. You speak to someone at Pure Talk, you'll find they speak English, and they love the country. It's wonderful, and they're pleasant. You want to switch? It's cake. Doesn't take any time at all. Keep your phone. Keep your phone number. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put 2 and 2 together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The slow frog boil of all of us, myself included, is very real. And what I mean by that is, you know the story, the frog, you drop it in boiling water, it'll jump right out. But you drop it in regular water and slowly heat it up, it'll just stay there till it dies. Well, we get used to how scandalous this administration has been, how scandalous Democrats are. Joe Biden has been running a criminal enterprise for really, from what we can tell, the entirety of his political career. You're not allowed to use your office to enrich yourself, your brother, your dirtball cousin, your scumbag son. That's not how that works. These things are illegal. And now we have this new report from the House Judiciary Committee. Let's ask the chairman about it. Joining me now, the chairman of that Judiciary Committee, Congressman Goodwin from the state of Ohio, Congressman Jim Jordan. Okay, so what is this report? It's long. It's 292 pages, and it looks awfully bad for the sitting president.
Yeah, I mean, two things we think happened here. One, you have abuse of power from Joe Biden, and that would be the crime. And then, of course, the other one is obstruction of justice. And the first one is relative to the millions of dollars the Biden family took in. And, you know, the fundamental question is, well, what were they doing for all that money? Millions of dollars coming from foreign entities, foreigners. What were they doing to get that money? And, of course, Devin Archer told us, not me saying it, not Jesse Kelly saying it, it's Devin Archer, Hunter Biden's business partner, saying they were selling access to the brand to the big guy, Joe Biden, and that's why they were able to receive all this money. And then, of course, the second one is obstruction of justice. This is where the Biden White House, the Biden Justice Department denied us access to the Robert Hur tapes, where Robert Hur had interviewed Joe Biden in the classified documents investigation. This is where David Weiss didn't allow us to have David Weiss answer all the questions we asked him, where the Justice Department wouldn't allow us to interview Mr. Morgan, Mr. Daley, two attorneys who were involved in the Hunter Biden investigation. So those are the two conclusions we reach in the report, and we lay out all the facts and the stuff that we have talked about a lot over the last year.
Congressman, the selling access thing, and I understand there's a million shell corporations, as you pointed out, and there have been a lot of people trying to cover up what it is. But have we ever figured out any specifics on what exactly Joe Biden was selling for that access? You know, access to Jim Jordan, if you were corrupt, which you're not, but access to Jim Jordan would be nice, but getting to meet you at a cocktail party doesn't line my bank account. You have to do something. You have to find a way to funnel taxpayer money to my bank account in some way, for lack of a better way to put it. Do we think that's what he did?
Well, we know he did. We know he took specific actions relative to Burisma. I mean, I always thought this was the best example and the most compelling evidence we had. Hunter Biden gets put on the board of Burisma. Fact number two, Hunter Biden's not qualified to be on the board. He said so himself in an ABC interview. Fact number three, the head, the CEO of this Ukrainian energy company asked Hunter Biden, hey, we're under a lot of pressure from the prosecutor. Can you weigh in with DC? Now, Devin Archer, when he testified at one moment, at one point in his deposition, he said, after Hunter Biden gets that request, Hunter Biden calls his dad. And then another part of his deposition, he said, Devin Archer said Hunter Biden called DC. What we do know is 5 days after that call happens, whether it's to DC or to Joe Biden when he's vice president, 5 days later, Joe Biden goes to Ukraine and tells the Ukrainian government, unless you fire the very prosecutor applying the pressure to the Burisma, to the Ukrainian energy company that Hunter Biden sits on the board of, unless you deal with this prosecutor and fire him, you're not getting $1 billion American taxpayer money. So Joe Biden leveraged our tax money to get an outcome that benefited the company his son was sitting on the board of, the same company his son was not qualified to be on the board of. So that is the best example of where you see this abuse of power taking place.
You know, it's amazing. I've talked about this story a million times. Even I wasn't aware of the timeline. It was 5 days afterwards. Gosh, what a bunch of dirtballs. All right, let's go to obstruction of justice, because this is something that's probably, honestly, a bigger deal. $1 billion is not pocket change. But if we have a Justice Department, a DOJ, that has been corrupted by Democrats to work on their behalf, that is a very big deal. That's nation-ending stuff. How deep do we think this rabbit hole goes?
Well, my big concern was, I'll use the example of Robert Hur's investigation into the classified documents. You know, it's supposed to be equal treatment under the law in our great country. Well, on one hand, we have President Trump, who was charged in Florida. Now, Judge Cannon has made some decisions down there that I think are good, and that case is basically on hold now. But President Trump was charged for mishandling classified information. And then, of course, had his home raided by Jack Smith, for goodness sake. And then you have the situation of Joe Biden, where on page one of Mr. Hur's report, he says Joe Biden knowingly kept classified information, Joe Biden knowingly shared classified information, and he shared it with someone who wasn't allowed to get it, someone who wasn't, you know, didn't have a clearance, namely his ghostwriter. Then on page 231 of the report, Special Counsel Hur points out why Joe Biden did it. He said Joe Biden had strong motivations for ignoring classified procedures because he was writing a book for which he got paid $8 million in an advance. So we have motive, $8 million motive. We have the elements of the crime, but he doesn't get charged because Robert Hur says, oh, Joe Biden's forgetful old man who, who's going to be sympathetic to a jury. Okay, if that's your conclusion, but we'd like all the evidence, because what we see is this double standard, President Trump getting charged and Joe Biden not. So we asked for the tapes, the audio tapes, which we're entitled to get in an impeachment inquiry that the House has voted to enter, and they wouldn't give us to us. The White House and Merrick Garland's Justice Department all said, no, you're not getting that information. So that, to me, that's one of the key obstruction items that we lay out in the 290-some page report.
Well, what do you do with this information from here? Obviously, it's a big deal if the president's corrupt. I want him to be, charged and everything else. At the same time, it's the end of August. The election's 15 minutes away. I'm sure you saw at least bits and pieces of Joe Biden last night, who definitely looks like he's on the back nine. What do you even bother with any of this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, look, the House of Representatives, under our Constitution, we took a formal vote to enter an impeachment inquiry phase of oversight, one of our constitutional duties. We felt, as the Judiciary Committee, the Oversight Committee, the Ways and Means Committee, the three committees who were charged with leading this investigation, we felt we should put together a report and present that to the House of Representatives. What happens next is up to the full House. You're right. We're 77 days away from what I think is just a critical election, one of those moments of significance in our country's history, which direction we're going to go. And the Democrats have already decided that Joe Biden is, you know, they've kicked him to the curb and he's no longer part of the ticket. So I understand all that. But we still felt it's important for the country to know what really happened, to see the results of our investigation, and to present that to the House. And what the House does is now up to the House of Representatives.
All right, I can't let you go without asking about the DNC freak show that is in Chicago this week. I did see, my producer did some math. They mentioned Trump's name 147 times last night. Hardly brought up things like the border, inflation, crime, but Donald Trump was center stage. These people don't actually run on anything, do they?
No, it's all about attacking President Trump and frankly saying crazy things. I mean, it's like I told a group the other day, not all Democrats are crazy, but the left that runs their party is. I mean, it's just like, you got to be kidding. I mean, here's the good thing though. We get to, this doesn't happen all that often in American politics where you have back-to-back administrations who are now running for President of the United States. We had 4 years of Trump, 4 years of Biden-Harris. Harris is running against President Trump. Which term was better? I mean, I tell people all the time, we went from a secure border to no border, safe streets, record crime, $2 gas, $4 gas, stable prices, record inflation. They just made the person who voted voted a tie-breaking vote for the Inflation Reduction Act that caused all the inflation. They just made her the nominee. The borders are. They just made her the nominee. So I think we got a clear choice here that the country will see. And that'll start to be clear, I think, when we have the debates, when JD squares off against Tim Walz and when President Trump squares off against Vice President Harris.
Yeah, I look forward to those. Congressman, thank you, sir. As always, I appreciate you. All right. The animals are on the streets in Chicago. Julio Rosas is knee-deep in it like he always is. Let's talk to Julio about that. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you about this. You ever taken something to sleep? You have, and everyone has. Let me ask you, how'd you feel the next morning? I know you went to sleep. I have no doubt you did. There's a bunch of things that'll knock you out. How'd you feel the next day? I remember last time my wife took some kind of cough syrup thing. She had a horrible cold, was worried she wasn't going to sleep, took some cough syrup at night, and she woke up the next day after 11 hours, and she said, I wish I'd never taken anything. I'm so tired, I want to die. That's how you normally feel. Not with Dream Powder. Dream Powder from Beam, you just sip on a cup of hot chocolate as you're going to bed. It's natural. Things like melatonin, it's not that it puts you to sleep, it does. And anything can do that, though. It's when you wake up. You wake up feeling great. Isn't that how you want to wake up? 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Go get a bag. We'll be back.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sorry, I even snorted. I'm sorry, these things make me laugh. Joining me now, my friend Julio Rosas, national correspondent for The Blaze. And surprise, surprise, Julio has thrown himself in with all the freaks again. Okay, Julio, you're in Chicago, which is actually a pretty fun city for most of the year, only not now. What's it like there?
Well, right now, there's rumors circulating about a potential bomb threat at the hotels where DNC delegates are being housed right now. So that kind of sets the scene for how just kind of crazy things have gotten. Obviously, we're only day two into this. I don't know if those are real or not, but this was expected, right? I mean, the protests were expected to be crazy. Yesterday got pretty crazy. There were a lot of people, a couple thousand that showed up to march on the United Center, which is where the DNC is being held at mostly. And I got to be honest, I didn't think that they'd be able to tear down that temporary security fence. These aren't people that go to the gym normally. They don't really believe in strength training, but I guess they proved that given enough time and enough dedication that they're gonna do their best to take down any obstacle. And so it is pretty significant that they were able to tear down the fence in multiple places, because that never even came close to the RNC. And of course, this wasn't done by MAGA, right? This was done by the far left and actual communists.
Okay. I saw Joe Biden say this last night about the protesters outside having a point. Here he was.
Those protesters out in the street, they have a point. A lot of innocent people are being killed on both sides.
Okay, Julio, I have to ask, what point, what are the protesters saying? All I see is little clips online, and I see your reporting. What point is Joe Biden making there, Julio?
He just doesn't know what's going on. I mean, and that's obviously just been the mainstay for his entire time in office. I mean, they have a point. They were calling for him to go to hell. They were, you know, saying that he's Genocide Joe and everything. I mean, these aren't his friends by any stretch of the imagination. And I cannot emphasize enough that a large makeup of the crowd was either pro Hamas or communist, like straight up communist. And I'm not saying that to be funny, but I mean that is the furthest of the left within that coalition. And so they hate the United States. They hate what it stands for, and they'd be more than happy to, if given the opportunity, they'd more than happy to overthrow things. Now, I think obviously they need to have a bit more numbers in order for that to happen, but that's what they want. That's what they want. And so, you know, they're just using the Israel-Hamas war as a vehicle for their radical ideas, as, you know, they typically do. They latch on to any, you know, current thing to advance their cause. And as we've seen yesterday, their threats should be taken seriously, because they did try, and they almost took down the second fence, because the second fence was very flimsy. It wasn't like the first one that it took down. So, if it wasn't for the additional police officers that arrived, I mean, they could have gotten pretty close to the United Center.
Good grief. Julio, are the Hamas lovers, are they the biggest and loudest and most violent group there? I know there are a bunch of different commie subgroups in this country, from the feminist hags to the LGBTQ Air Force types. I know all the different groups, but are the Hamas ones the ones front and center?
Yeah, I mean, at the start of the march, there was a guy waving a Hamas flag, a black jihadist flag, and a Palestinian flag that was superimposed with the spokesman for the Hamas military wing. So that was front and center, right? And then there was another guy wearing patches of the Hezbollah and the Martyrs Brigade in the West Bank. So. This is just something that I've noticed over the past couple of months, and I've told you before, where they're no longer hiding their support for Hamas and actual terrorist groups, because the war has continued on. The ceasefire hasn't happened. The arms embargo hasn't happened. And so that's why they're willing to not only say that we support Hamas, but also that we're going to try to breach the security perimeter around the DNC in order to pressure the Democrats to bend to their demands.
Julio, I'm guessing a lot of these people, the vast majority of these people, are not native Chicagoans, that they're, of course, bused and flown in from all over.
And the official March Instagram page was sharing all the different groups that were coming in to Chicago yesterday, whether it was on buses or flights or, yeah, you name it.
Joe Biden last night said this about the border. I thought this was interesting.
Then I had to take executive action. The result of the executive action I took, border encounters have dropped over 50%. In fact, there are fewer border crossings today than when Donald Trump left office.
Julio, you practically live down there. Is that true?
It is true at this point right now in the sense that, yes, border crossings are down, but it's basically he flooded the house and he finally got around to turning off the spigot. And it's like, okay, you might have temporarily, you know, solved one issue, but because you allowed this to happen for such a long time, I mean, down the street from the hotel, and I'm in the heart of downtown Chicago, I see tons of migrant families having to sell candy with their kids out in the street. And, you know, that's not a humane policy. But it's a desperate attempt. The executive action was purely political. He could have done it way sooner. He could have done it day one after he revoked all the Trump admin stuff related to the border. But obviously he didn't. It was an issue that wasn't going away. It was an issue that obviously a lot of Americans are rightly upset about. And so it's significant that, yes, you know, Biden might have done that, but he's no longer at the top of the ticket. It's going to be Harris, who was, you know, a California radical who wanted to decriminalize illegal crossings, who is, you know, more than happy to denigrate the Border Patrol and all that. So it shouldn't be taken seriously. It's not a serious policy. And even, yes, let's say he did solve the border crisis, we still have to deal with the ginormous after effects of letting all these people, these millions of people in, and the way that they were able to get in. It's going to be an issue that's going to plague the United States for a very, very long time, even if Trump gets back into office.
Have you had a chance to talk to any Chicagoans? How do they feel about all these illegals? Are they just baked into the cake now? You got some cheap chiclets whenever you're leaving lunch, or are they still upset about it?
No, they're still pretty upset about it because when you look at where they're placing the shelters, the temporary shelters, or the amount of money that is being spent to support them, a lot of native Chicagoans are just saying, well, hold on, you could have spent all this money on us, but you're instead spending it on these people who shouldn't even be here. And that's why it's been pretty funny to watch that the people that are saying it, they're not people that typically vote for Republicans or Trump, but they sound like, when they're at these, you know, city, either neighborhood meetings or city council meetings, they sound like they're coming straight from a Trump rally. You know, they're talking about building the wall and sending them all back in these deep blue pockets. Now, of course, you can say, well, they voted for that because, you know, this is a deep blue city, and there is a point to that. But at the same time, the horrific effects of that is more than just the money being spent. It's obviously all the crime that is being committed by people who shouldn't be here in the first place. They handed themselves in to Border Patrol and then they were released and they've gone out and commit horrible crimes. I mean, there was just that case from the Peruvian guy who was wanted for like 23 murders and he was released by the Biden administration. So it's not, like I said, it's not an issue that's going to go away. I don't think a lot of people are going to buy the Biden and Harris administration's approach now and the campaign promises because we've had 3 years of just total dysfunction.
Yeah, I agree. Julio, thank you, brother. Appreciate it. All right. Leilani Doubting, former Miss Great Britain, she's in the UK, obviously. And what's happening over there is crazy. These people, they can't even speak honestly on social media. This is not something that's happening in North Korea. If you're in the UK, you can't just get on Facebook or Twitter or something like that and say, man, it's been too much Muslim immigration. The cops will come knock on your door and send you to prison. We're going to talk to her. I don't even know how free she's going to be to speak, but we're going to talk to her next.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I would say that 100,000 people in a totally peaceful manner, 1 million people watching it live online, we were on the verge of a cultural revolution in Great Britain. And that can spread, and it will spread, because other countries will look for inspiration, and I'll say it's the British spirit. We've been silent. You've woken a sleeping lion. That's what they've done. They've woken a sleeping lion, and that lion's not going to shut. And for too long, if you look at our country, with 1,000 years of English history, in 70 years, they've literally destroyed it. Are we going to stay silent for another 30 or 40 until it's gone? No, we're not. And because we're saying that, we're a danger and a threat.
It saddens me what's happening across the pond. One, because I know what's happening here, and two, because I have such an admiration for the British people and their history. I just thought, look, I'm a fan. Their food sucks, but I'm a fan of the country. Joining me now, Leilani Dowding, contributor to Stein Online, former Miss Great Britain. That's quite a notch on the belt. Leilani, tell me what's happening in your country.
You know, Jesse, it's crazy. I mean, I don't even know where to start. We've had these riots, but now because of these riots, which started because three little girls were brutally murdered, and the Prime Minister came to visit the site where it happened, and people got really angry, started telling him, heckling him, telling him to go away. They didn't want him there. It then turned into rioting, and that kind of snowballed. There was looting, which, by the way, I'm completely and utterly against any kind of looting, like I was with BLM. But instead of the Prime Minister saying that there were these, you know, bad people, some agitators, or, you know, just real wrong-uns being there, he decided to blame it on the EDL and the far right. Now, the EDL hasn't existed in 10 years, so that was a complete lie. And it wasn't far right. This was started by very, very angry people, people that were angry about a lot of the policies that this government that's in recently and the previous government made. So that's like they've literally just taken away the fuel payments for pensioners in the winter while giving all this money to Ukraine, while, you know, giving net zero money to Africa. So we've got all of this going on. Meanwhile, they're doing nothing about crime. They're doing nothing about the violent crimes in our city, muggings, looting. So people were angry, really, really angry, and they took to the streets. And because it's against the government have really clamped down, emergency measures in place, opening 24-hour courts just to go after these people. So it's been absolutely nuts over here. And when you look at it, the biggest complaint is that there's a two-tier system. And when you look at it, you can actually look at the way judges, the same judges that have put people away for, you know, chants, or, you know, not even violent attacks, put people away for chanting, they've put people away for social media posts. These exact same judges have then let paedophiles with child abuse images free. So we've got an entire two-tier system going on in this country. It's crazy. And a lot of the issues have been conflated and confused on purpose, so the government can carry on with this narrative that it's the far right. But, you know, people in England are angry. And even now, you know, people like me even, we're afraid to say what we feel about illegal immigration because we've seen what's happened how the government have reacted to just round everyone up and put these people in jail. It's absolutely nuts out here.
Leilani, can you give me some frame of reference for how big these protests are? And I say this because, you know, all you see is video online. You wake up, you're looking at stuff on your phone. Yeah. I remember the Brexit stuff. I remember all this stuff. Are these protests as big, bigger, the biggest you've ever seen, angrier? Compare these to other things you've seen.
Okay, so I think this particular video here, this was a very, very peaceful protest on the 27th of July. I think this was Tommy Robinson's, which I actually attended, and it was a beautiful rally, very peaceful. There was no trouble that happened. Then you've had smaller riots, much, much, much smaller than these, break out. So there were protests. And what happened during these riots is the police behaved very, very differently than in, say, the BLM riots. Or the week before, there was a riot in a place called Hare Hills in Leeds, where the Child Protection Services had taken custody of a Romanian family because they'd taken away a child. So these riots broke out with these Romanians, these immigrants. And the way the police dealt with those riots and protests were very different than the way they behaved with the first riot or protest in Southport. It started out as a peaceful protest. People went there to kind of protest about the fact that knife crime is on the rise, that the government aren't doing anything about, you know, young girls and women being stabbed. They're turning a blind eye to all kinds of crime. And after they broke out, these other smaller riots and protests kind of broke out. And the way the police handled it was just so different to other protests. They almost caused the riot, in fact, by, first of all, the riots, by calling the first one a protest and riot from the far right. See, it's so confusing, Jesse. It's so confusing. But these riots were very small in proportion to that big rally of Tommy Robinson's on the 27th, and very small compared to the lockdown protests, and very small compared to the big BLM protests we saw here. So they're very, very small. They were just very, I'd say they were very heated. They were a lot more heated.
Leilani, I have this little clip of a government official. You mentioned the two tiers of justice. He's talking about letting violent nutball, well, here he is.
We will guarantee a prison cell. We will make sure that those people who need to be in prison will be in prison, not necessarily in the area where they live. They may be 200-300 miles away from home, but we will guarantee people a prison cell.
With the numbers are so tight there, how can you make that guarantee?
They are tight, and that's why we've initiated Operation Early Dawn. So basically, the easiest way to describe it is one in, one out. So as people get released, we can then pick up people from police cells and take them to court, and we will triage that three times a day.
Leilani, let me ask you something, because you obviously are understandably being careful with what you say. Are you worried about a knock on the door?
Absolutely. And I don't think I've said anything inflammatory or hateful. There's a lot of people really upset with the way the government and the previous government are running this country. And so many people are really afraid to talk about anything. Now, as you see there, that guy was talking about this one in, one out. Prior to the recent protests, riots, they announced that a guy who was done for manslaughter is going to be released after 6 months because of prison overcrowding. The Labour government got in and started talking about prison overcrowding way before the protests. But what we've seen is at least 490 people charged already who are likely to get a jail sentence. Now, let me just give you an example of the two-tier policing. There was a guy, 61 years old, who chanted, "Who the F is Allah?" Obviously, he used the actual word. "Who the F is Allah?" He got 18 months. That was his sentence. Yet, all charges were dropped for a convoy that went by in cars shouting out, "Rape. We're going to rape your Jewish daughters." So that's the kind of two-tier policing that's going on. A guy got, he got sentenced to 3 years for looting a cosmetic store. And Two asylum seekers have just been released without any charge for stealing a £25,000, mugging a man off his £25,000 Rolex. So these two asylum seekers won't face a day in jail for mugging, violently mugging this man. But this guy is going to spend 3 to 4 years in jail for looting a cosmetic store. Now, again, I want to say, and I have to say this, that I don't agree with looting at any, I don't agree with looting. I don't agree with arson, whatever side or whatever you're trying to protest about. But, you know, the punishment has to fit the crime. And this is like, this is insane. What they're letting off and letting people go for versus what they're locking up for is nuts. And again, this is why people are so angry. You know, a guy just walked into a kosher supermarket in Golders Green with a knife, brandishing his knife, got arrested, and was let go, suspended sentence. So this is what we're seeing. We're seeing this two-tier policing happening, and we're seeing people literally getting locked up for emojis on Facebook and saying things that they consider inflammatory. Now, the problem is hate is obviously subjective. And some of these things, they haven't even mentioned a race. You know, there it was a police car that was on fire and the guy's like, go on, people of Stockport. Now, they're saying that's inflammatory. The guy gets 2 years in jail. This is what it's got to, you know. And even a judge had said, just being at and watching riots could end you up in jail with no bail. But they have literally just put on bail a man who is very well known in England. He's a British newsreader who pleaded guilty for having child sex abuse images on his phone. He got jail, but these people are saying, you know, if you've been to a protest and you've just viewed a protest, you might not get bail. You know, that's how insane it's got here, that people are terrified.
Yeah, that is scary. We're not talking about China. This is frigging Britain. Leilani, keep your head down. Keep safe out there. I appreciate you. Gosh. All right. That is sad. That's the way it's going right now. Coming here too. Lighten the mood. Next.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And nothing lightens my mood more than watching anti-communists attack the communist filth and get victories out there. Robbie Starbuck, he's my friend. He's been really going after the communism in corporate America and getting them to stop what they're doing. Tractor Supply was one of the first ones. Recently, he's been hot on Harley Davidson. You know, Harley Davidson is thought of as this all-American brand. You know, motorcycle clubs, motorcycle groups are in general a patriotic bunch. You know, go America, that kind of thing. Well, it turns out Harley Davidson was taken over, of course, by a bunch of filthy communists who did a bunch of things to dump all over you, your country, and your culture. And Harley Davidson, after feeling the intense pressure, is apparently backing off. Here's Robbie talking about it.
All right, y'all, today is a very good day. We are now 3 for 3 taking down woke companies and forcing changes. We have forced changes at Tractor Supply, at John Deere, and now at Harley Davidson. I'm going to show you the statement they put up and talk about what it means and how this is going to affect what we do going forward. I have to start with this. I think it's hilarious that the letter starts with, We are saddened by the negativity on social media for the last few weeks. You can be sad all you want, Harley, but we get results. We got results, and your sadness really doesn't matter. So let's dive into what they're actually promising here. Number one, there will not be any DEI function at Harley-Davidson. Sponsorships are now going to focus on the motorcycle business or on helping first responders, active military, or veterans. This next item here might be my favorite. They are no longer going to participate in the HRC CEI score. These CEI scores essentially are social credit systems to force behaviors and compel employees into silence because they believe only one way of thinking is acceptable at work. That's not okay. Harley also promises that trainings will no longer have socially motivated content. DEI and woke policies only exist as a byproduct of silence. People being silent allows customers to be fooled into thinking these companies have not gone totally crazy. The minute you shine sunlight on it, these companies face pressure that they cannot withstand. We have the power.
About that. Normal people doing activism, even online, making decisions with their dollar, gets results. We ended up getting taken over and surrounded because we were way too laissez-faire. We were way too hands-off. Live and let live. You cannot live and let live with communists. You must destroy them. Good job, Robbie. See you tomorrow.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.